So there's been a fair old history of social centres in Sheffield. Squatted ones, rented ones. To my knowledge, none of them have been bought. I don't know an owned social centre in Sheffield. So more recently, there was Matilda's, which some people have referred to, which was a squat that lasted for a year. And since then, there's been about three fortnight-long social centres in squatted buildings. The one that got referred to, Piscar House in Northumberland Road, that was two different squats in the weeks that followed on from each other. And from that, there was a feeling that it would be good to have more permanent space. And there's pros and cons of renting and buying and squatting, but it was felt by the collective that got together that owning a space would be the best long-term approach to it, to have some permanency, to be able to have an ongoing project. So, we've been trying to do that since then, to actually get a building. And in the meantime, also doing shorter-term things. So we did a free school weekend last October, which was in a building that we had with permission, and we ran workshops and did entertainment and just had as a kind of an example of how to organise non-hierarchically, an idea of the kind of things that we might like to see, some of the things we might like to see going on in the social centre. And since then, there hasn't been a huge amount of activity, but there is plans to do another free school in October, and there's a meeting for that on the 13th of June in the Rutland at 7 o'clock for anyone who wants to come and get involved in that. But other people could chip in with other things that have happened in Sheffield. That's just a very brief...
Well, I guess there's the element of like how we've decided to go about getting a permanent social centre. And I mean, there's been numerous discussions about it over the past year and a half, anyway. So it came from, having a admittedly fairly short-term squat, two in succession, and then off the back of that, sort of feeling like maybe that the way we wanted to go was down the route of places like the Sumac and try and set up somewhere permanent. And that's really kind of, that whole process has been quite slow up to now. We've just starting to properly talk about how to register as a cooperative, so like as a legal entity, and then hopefully move towards being able to get a building. And obviously that's got the kind of compromising elements of like engaging in getting a mortgage and having to raise money like on a regular basis to pay that off and stuff like that. So it's not a foregone conclusion, but that's the direction things are moving at the moment. And I guess we've got a reasonably, a smallish but committed group of us, and people are coming and going over like periods of months, as like people come to Sheffield for a year or something and get involved and then move away and stuff like that. So it's sort of gentle ups and downs, I suppose.
The way I see it, there's like a process that we've got to go through, and we're in sort of step one, you sort your constitution out, then you register legally as a co-op, then you can get a bank account, and then once you've got a bank account, then you can start fundraising properly, sort out your business plan, which we've had some help from someone from Sumac Social Centre to begin thinking about a business plan. Also, once you've got a bank account, you can do things like looking at borrowing money, so we don't have to raise £200,000 or whatever out of donations. It's not such a pipe dream like that. We can actually hopefully borrow a good part of the money, can't we? I think that one reason why it's gone a bit slower than we thought, but it's quite a good thing, is getting involved with other things. Everyone in the social centre group is also involved in other things. It's almost that there's more activity going on than we'd like in Sheffield City, you get a bit diverted. But also to mention the last October's free school, I think that took a lot of our energy and then we were all a bit quiet after that. But to me, the significant thing was the amount of trouble it took to get to a venue, get all the stuff in one place, and then we had to ship all the stuff out again. And if we had a venue, a physical place to be, a lot of the stuff that we're already involved in would be a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
That's worth going for.
I missed the last meeting. Could anyone... Were any decisions made at the last meeting in terms of the legal structure stuff? Because we were advised by we're advised that we couldn't get funding to register as a co-op straight away, and what we've been advised is to set up as an unincorporated association now, and we can set up a bank account as an unincorporated association and then work on the business plan and identify buildings and stuff like that, and when we're a bit further down the road, then apply for funding to help get the co-op registration sorted out.
We just said that we were going to look at those Seeds for Change rules. I don't know if everyone knows about Seeds for Change, the group that does the consensus and direct action training, and they give support to groups like us. And yeah, so I don't know. All that's been happened is that I've sent around their sort of, what do you call it?
Model
constitution, yeah. Which is fairly simple, really. So yeah, that's been emailed around.
I'd be quite interested, given that there's other people in the room today who are involved in other social centres, so like Ratstar being squatted and Sumac being long-term... fairly stable bought property, and others that other people might have dived into at other times. Just, yeah, if there's anything that you guys want to say about your experiences of those places. I mean, yeah. I know Ratstar kind of had some problems recently, and how it's obviously different, it's not possible in Sheffield to do what's possible in London. Because there's lots of different dynamics, including the number of individuals who can be found to be committed to the project and stuff. So it's not really a direct comparison, but it's still interesting to see what else is possible in other places. Do you guys want to say anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing to say about the Ratstar is even though it calls itself a squatter social centre, they've actually got an agreement with the owner,
mm-hmm.
and they pay a small peppercorn rent, and there's an agreement that they'll have 4 month notice until the owner wants to renovate the building, use it for something else. Even that didn't stop the council getting on the back of everyone there about licensing.
Mm-hmm.
They basically, the council said, we don't care whether you own, rented, squatted, whatever. As far as we're concerned, you're putting on events, selling alcohol, mm-hmm. having a regular cafe night, you haven't got agreement with us to do this. So basically you've got to stop. And then people got a bit worried after that, took everything off the website, and then there was a kind of a renewal process that took time again after that. They moved the cafe from Wednesday to Tuesday to try and make it underground, and then it just spread through word of mouth, which was very different, and there's a different dynamic of people started coming. And then eventually people got the this is a brief history, I suppose. People got the confidence back, moved the cafe back to the Wednesday. But the website still was never updated. The other thing I'd say briefly is the dynamics of the space was very much the fact that it was lived in,
mm-hmm.
and people came from different activist groups, but really struggled to kind of find priority for the space. People wanted to have it just for the cafe. People wanted as little kind of, I'd say a bit like as little use of it as a social centre as possible, and that was just to do with people's personal ambitions. Think a little bit in terms of why they were in London and stuff, without going too much detail.
So more just a communal space to hang out.
Yeah, I guess they wanted to invite their friends and have it as a place that they could put on parties rather than. And so that was just a question of being there from the beginning to kind of have a sort of check on what people wanted and whether there could be a consensus from day one. Because after that, then it was never really a decision made on. There was never really consensus. Well, there hasn't been consensus on the space in terms of events
mm-hmm.
That go on there.
How many people is there?
It's usually it's between it varies around 12.
Right.
So quite a big space.
And the people who make the decisions for the Rat Start, is it just those 12 residents, or are there other people who come and have a say?
They have open monthly meetings, but there's a clear hierarchy, and people have really felt that they've come along to a Monday meeting and just not been able to have as much say as people who live there.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, there's been a quite an oppressive element to the space.
Oppressive.
Yeah. And if people have asked me if they could say that, I've had to say, to be honest, it depends who answers the door. Someone can answer the door and they could be really friendly and be like, yeah, cool, we're open. Or it could be like, who are you, what do you want? You know.
Yeah.
And people got back from Calais late at night and they were clearly activists, they knew people who lived there. And they were like, oh, well, the people you know aren't in at the moment, like, can you come back later? And they were like, no, we want to stay here. Like, we're just tired, we've been to Calais, we need a place to stay. We were told we could stay here, like, let us in.
Yeah.
And so, like, just, yeah, a lot of crazy, like, squat politics, even though it's not squat. And, yeah, and then they got raided and the electricity got turned off just before the royal wedding, which was the last kind of thing that's led to another new man period of reflection.
And is it open again since then?
Yeah, I mean, is it open? It's one of these questions that they've always struggled with. You know, it's like, do we have a time that we're open until? Do we kind of say we're open to some people, not everyone? Are we only for activists? Are we for people who are, you know, from the community but aren't sort of the same politics as us? And those are the questions I was referring to when I said there's never really consensus set. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in a sense, it's as open, it's pretty much carried on as before.
Right.
They lost it for 20 hours and then were able to get back access to it again.
But some stuff got impounded?
Computers, laptops and phones are all being held still.
And on the other hand, we have Sumac.
Yeah, I feel a bit apprehensive about talking about Sumac as in somehow representing it. Like, I've sort of moved up the range about like 6 months ago, I think. So I've just sort of been involved since then, and obviously it has a much longer history. What's apparent is that, you know, it's quite a secure space, and that, you know, people are taking the time to work out, oh, you know, we probably should insulate the beer cellar better, you know, that'll be more efficient, and, you know, maybe we're using a bit too much water here and there and that sort of thing. And so, aside from, you know, just you can get beyond the daily grind, perhaps, even though you have the sort of the boring sort of pain in the rim and this sort of thing, you can sort of, you have a bit more freedom to see a long-lasting project come to fruition and gradually let it develop and hopefully get better.
Has there been any attempts in Hull to do anything?
Not that I'm aware of. And yeah, from a personal experience I think it's likely that there's something going on that I haven't heard about. It's pretty quiet, sadly.
And as well, I think with places like Sumac, there's a risk of it being seen as like an institution, sort of a bit of a rock, and that there's like a lull of volunteers and stuff to keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's in danger, but definitely like it's not being used to its full potential.
Do you feel that's because everyone just thinks Sumac's fine, we don't need to bother, or because it's seen as boring and they'd rather get involved in something that's new and dynamic? Or,
well, I think there's been a lot of people who had acted as sort of core volunteers who have left, and just, you know, people come to like Czech Republic or, you know, wherever, like they've just disappeared. And so, you know, perhaps in some way those people are key roles, and, you know, people just depended on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so perhaps it hasn't been that sort of, you know, if you have a squat space, it's like a call that goes out and people are like, oh, that sounds exciting, let's go now. And so it can be like a flash of energy, and a lot of people can come together and put effort in, whereas it might not have that long term commitment that you find in a different type of project.
Yeah, I've definitely heard various anecdotes about people who've been, like, someone who ran the bar for years and years and, like, always wanted to hand over and just, you know, never was able to, and then eventually just said, like, right, I'm not doing any more, someone else
We're trying to do like Skillshare at the moment, and it was kind of going okay. It's like you have a steady sort of visiting, and then you sort of dropped off the number of people who had skills to volunteer, and sort of then the person who was sort of organising had the email list went to Spain and this sort of thing. Yeah. So we're trying to just pick up the pieces and like trying to get people motivated again, and like there was very much sort of, I think, as well as the danger of a few people doing everything just because they think, oh, I've got to keep going, you know, that's really important. But in doing that, they've made other people rely on them, and they've not not created the structure which is independent of them.
I mean, I guess in some ways we've got that same sort of situation in the sense that I don't know how many people have come to our meetings over the course of the time we've been having them, but it's maybe like 20, 30, 40 more, I don't know. So a lot of people come to like a couple, and then either maybe thought like it's not for them, or they've got other stuff they're involved in or busy with or whatever, but then obviously there's always that element of like, well, a small group of people ends up sort of taking something on until such a point arrives where there's some kind of need for influx of energy, and then you've got to say like, well, need more people. I definitely, there's a little book that got put together about like with accounts from various social centres around the country, and I remember reading a few of them. I can't remember which one specifically, maybe like the one in 12 and maybe one in Liverpool maybe as well, and just little stories about when they started up and talking about, oh yeah, so there were like three of us kind of reglazing all the windows and like plastering loads of walls and stuff, and thinking like, where are the people? And spending like a year or 2 years doing up a building, and then of course it opens and then more people come and get involved, but it's definitely a problem like worth having attention to.
Reflecting from that in terms of the difference between a squat centre and a home centre, and that people I think will assume, well, now if I start with the squatter one, it's almost like everyone who's going to live there would probably move in from day one and then be there to kind of do the building up together, whereas if it's home, people will kind of feel that there's a lot of work that people need to do, and maybe that's kind of a selfish thing that some people might kind of be like, oh well, you know, I'd rather be doing this, and then if the building's going to be nice, then, I don't know, people might almost shy away from the work, and that might be the hierarchy of activity or something.
Yeah.
I mean, as someone who's not had any personal experience, just looking from the outside, if someone kind of said to me, oh, this social centre is squatted, and this one's owned, I'd kind of be inclined to think that the one that's owned is in a much better position, it's much more secure, it maybe doesn't need my help so much, whereas if someone was squatted, I'd be very aware of the fact that, well, they might get closed down and all that kind of stuff. So I think in a way, like, there's almost a false sense of security with something being owned, especially if it has been going on for a long time. I think, as you were saying, like, people kind of just sort of drop out. And, so yeah,
I think maybe like in that circumstance, a good way to perhaps deal with that is to, well, like that bloke that at the bar where you say, I'm not going to do it anymore, kind of thing, just make it explicit that it can't be maintained by some group of people, and make it clear to people who are coming in that maybe they need to get involved as well as using the space, you know. Because that could certainly be something we come across as an issue, couldn't it?
Yeah, certainly. So. As well, yeah, perhaps sort of the aims of the space as well might be like, if your aim of space is to sort of ferment something else, and you have to address if it is or isn't doing that. If your aim of space is simply to provide, you know, a good social space for people just to hang out and just, you know, have a nice time, then that might be, you know, I might find you throw your energy into that. But if your aim for space is to, I don't know, overthrow capitalism, so you know, you might find that by creating a nice social space for people to hang out and drink beer, perhaps, isn't very effective, and that same energy could be done from any space. It may be your home, if it's just the same core people involved, that you don't, you know, is the space actually helping that to us? But I wouldn't underestimate sort of the value of just a cultural space for getting people involved in things, or just building, you know, a bit of community.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly like an argument against permanent spaces, whether they're kind of, you know, social centres or, and the same often gets said about housing co-ops, that the maintenance of that project becomes so time consuming that the activists who go into it end up just being completely absorbed by that and have no energy to do anything else. So, you know, if you, as you say, if your end, ultimate end is to do something, you know, bigger than that and more, you know, that influences wider change, that actually those individuals might have been better off just, you know, not putting their energy into that project and being involved in disparate activities. However, from the outside, and not looking at the individuals concerned, then it certainly is useful to know that there's a space, say, in Nottingham, where events can happen, where people can meet, where, you know, photocopying can be done, where there are resources to do things, where, you know, there's, where people can gravitate, where new people can go. There's lots to be said for it, but for the individuals involved, it may be quite a deep, you know, depoliticising and de-empowering experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's not to say, like, simply having a good space isn't good for people. I think it's very positive just for people to meet and that sort of thing. Like, it stops people feeling isolated and feeling rubbish, which is good in itself, even if it's not doing what you perhaps wanted to do on that side of things.
And it should be, I think, you know, in theory, it shouldn't be impossible to, you know, to have to some degree alleviate these problems with structures in terms of like rotation, so that you don't just have somebody who runs the bar for 3 years and everyone else just relies upon them. You know, it should be possible to, you know, be aware of that problem and to avoid it. You know, really, like, if everyone's committed to the ideal that we don't just have, you know, people who do specific roles and everyone else doesn't know how to do those roles and all those kind of problems, then, you know, it should be possible to get around them. If the will is there, then, you know, it's not as hard as some of the other things we try and do.
I mean, perhaps even just the act of noticing if someone's doing too much can be, because, you know, I know a couple of people who, you know, they're perfectionists and they're happy to, you know, skip the food, cook the food, wash up, because they want it done right and they're dedicated towards it. But sometimes, well, that's great for, you know, the 20 people who got to eat food. As soon as they've gone, as soon as, you know, they're ill, or as soon as they get burnt out and just, you know, decide to hate everyone, it's not a positive thing. So just, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, within the social centre collective, then the structure, the organisational structure we've always talked about is one of collectives, so that, you know, rather than having everyone just doing a bit of everything, and everyone does, you know, a bit of accounts and a bit of cooking and a bit of, like, bike maintenance and a bit of sorting out workshop timetables or whatever, and it's total chaos, that you have, you know, a body of knowledge, but it's a body of knowledge that isn't just within one person, so you have collectives who sort stuff out. But within that, no one person should be getting burnt out, which is, again, a fine theory, and, you know, in terms of decision-making and it being non-hierarchical and stuff, it's all fine, but if actually within a collective you've still just got one person, then the fact that that's your structure doesn't overcome the problem. So, you know, it's not enough. It's maybe a step in the right direction, but it's not enough to get around it.
I think the question is perhaps how can you evolve new people in sort of useful tasks, and not, like, not just be sort of this idea that you sort of attract them in with shiny, glittery, fun things, and just, you know, they sort of get away and the glittery, fun stuff goes. So.
So, any ideas from other other things that people have done, maybe.
I'd be interested to ask, you know, what's the experience of having a bar? Do you think actually selling alcohol might be a bad thing?
Well, I think the bar's probably the most popular element of Stewart, for example. Like, it brings in money, it supports the project, it brings in people, it sort of gives people time to just sit and talk to each other and sort of get to know each other, and that's a very important time and space to have generally, I think.
Yeah, I'm very, like, having been to the CMAC and seeing lots of people come in on days on the evenings when the bar was open, and also had this like meeting with Andy from CMAC, who was talking to us about finances. I feel aware that having a bar can be a central element, like socially and financially.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't drink alcohol, for example, but I really appreciate the bar being
there. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, because I was going to say, yeah, like, I know a fair few people who don't drink and don't, like, as a consequence, don't go to pubs regularly, if at all. Not because they hate them, just because, like, you don't.
Would you?
And, so, you know, that's interesting, though. Because, I mean, I'd automatically assume that, so having a bar as one of the main elements of your social channel would inevitably, like, make a lot of people who don't drink shy away.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps it is just about, you find it, you've got, like, three alcoholics propping it up, and, nothing else going on, but it might be a bit sort of...
Well, it's quite a tucked away of those, and you might know it's just, like, round the back of it, so you can...
I think you've got a social centre, and you have things that people do socially in them.
Yeah.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I've not had any experience with social centres, but I was just thinking about, you were saying about, like, having a few people doing all the work. I was involved in a student occupation at home, and I think there were a few parallels with that. Like, I noticed as well that we'd have a few people who were... We had a couple of our, like, one art student, and she ended up making all of our banners. And there were quite a few people who were interested in doing it, but they had no idea what they were doing. And the girl... What it took was someone who'd noticed this and was, like, kind of was willing to speak up, basically saying, well, do you feel like teaching these people? Like, I know you prefer to do it yourself because you want to do it right and you want to make it look great for the occupation, but perhaps in the long run it's better to have us all doing something, especially because we also found we did a few little events and it got quite a few people in. Not quite a few, but compared to how many of us were in there, it got people in. But then they came in and went, oh, this is cool, and then promptly left because there was nothing for them to do, whereas we'd kind of got people teaching others and stuff, and then we found a few more people stayed longer.
Yeah, just following on from that and kind of what was in my head when I was asking about other ways was just thinking about gatherings that are very kind of participatory. So it's made really, really clear that, you know, so like with physical camps, so we start off with a field and then all we've got is ourselves and we have to make this habitable for everybody who's here. And where there is that kind of, you know, emphasis on everybody is part of the setup crew, everybody is, you know, making the structures that we need, everybody is chopping the vegetables that we need to cook the food to eat and, you know, so forth, then that, because it's so kind of integral to the whole thing, I think that really helps in not having that kind of consumerist attitude to, like, well, we're putting on an event and you can come and, you know, take what you want from it and then go away again. And that involves, I think, getting people in from the start and feeling like, well, this event isn't going to happen unless everybody starts doing it. Like, there will be no dinner tonight unless you start chopping some onions. So, you know. I think that just helps people have more ownership over it and they feel proud that the event's happened because they've been part of it and, you know, they've helped to make it happen and that makes people feel good about it and so they want to come back and do another event like that. And, it feels quite a virtuous thing. And the problem once you've got an up-and-running permanent space is that people aren't, you know, they're coming into something that's already fully formed. There's a decision-making process set up, there's a way of chopping the vegetables, there's a way of getting food into the kitchen, and it's harder to... to get involved in. So it's like, well, how could I possibly cook the dinner? Because I couldn't possibly cook it according to the way that it's supposed to be cooked here.
Was there a question there?
No, not at all. Okay. No.
I think you've got to have some things written down and agreed that I haven't. Not necessarily the recipes for the meals, but I think we've got to talk a lot about how we want things to happen and not to happen. Having an unwritten constitution and spoken until something goes wrong.
How many people involved in the Sheffield idea for a social summit?
It varies depending on whether we're actually putting on an event, in which case there's more, or whether we're in a bit of a downtime of like thinking about what we should do, in which case there's less. So, yeah.
We've had meetings with 15, so
yeah, so kind of. Yeah, and.
There's quite a few people on the periphery, isn't there, who do keep coming back, but don't generally get involved in the sort of nitty gritty side of things.
One way or another, it's not a massive collective. Yeah. It's not, it doesn't necessarily need to be.
No, it's just a curious one, I think.
Yeah.
Either for or against big or small.
It's quite interesting to talk enough about aims as well, because we've, initially we set down like three principles of anti-capitalism, non-hierarchy, and non-discrimination or sex-based towards the way we call it, and obviously that isn't anything out of the ordinary, but they're like, I guess they're principles like verging on aims in terms of like aims about how to organise ourselves and what sort of events to facilitate and things like that, but having an even more explicit aim, like, I mean, obviously, you were just saying, like, overthrowing capitalism was, like, an extreme one, but having, I don't know,
yeah,
it'd be interesting to think about.
Making sure you're not getting caught up in
something
that you set out to do and then somehow it's taken down the path.
Totally. Well, yeah, there's that element, and I don't know, it would be interesting to think about having aims in between.
Medium-term aims.
Yeah. I guess there would be things like practical things, like having a physical space and things like that, but I don't know if there'll be any other. Maybe it'd be impossible to make and achieve. It's like we want to support so many people doing. I don't know.
What, do you want us to have more targets?
No, I don't want us to. No, not definitely not targets. That's what I was just realising. But I don't know. It'd be an interesting thing to.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, just organising things like sort of periodic open days that are explicitly like, you know, this is how you can get involved.
Yeah.
Like just simple, way. Say, you know, let's do some work sort of thing. Or, you know, I've been doing this for a while, I can pass on to you if you want to get involved in this area. Because perhaps, you know, I'm taking this down a very particular tangent, but I kind of feel that it's quite like.
I think it's sort of like there's a sort of, because I know like what you said about the sort of lanes of the space, they're quite sort of broad and vague, but in terms of like physically what you wanted to do with the space may draw people in. So for example, I don't know if you said it right, we want a space for various sorts of volunteering community and non-hierarchical groups to have a regular meeting space, then potentially those groups or people from those groups that will be potentially using the space will come forward and think, well, we've got a vested interest in this because if we help out with it, then, so like for example, I know I sort of help out with Sheffield Pride and we meet in the university if they don't throw us out because we're not used to do with the place, or in someone's front room or that, and you know, if someone was saying, well, potentially there could be this place where you'd be able to meet every Tuesday without worrying where you are and stuff, then that might be something we get involved in. Or if it was something like, we said we want something that could, you know, it's a space that could help raise funds for good causes, then people that are doing that type of activity might get involved, because they'd, yeah, in terms of, so I think the aims are really broad without sort of saying, I know you don't want to say, right, we're going to do this and this is our exact timetable and, you know, and not have any openness, but I think potentially, like you say, we're, you've got a squad in London that's not, you're not entirely sure what's happening there, people haven't reached consensus where you, like say, you said, right, we want to do, within our aims, what we'd like to do is we'd like to have a social space, we'd like to have a space for groups to meet, and then we'd like to have a space that we can put an event, so I don't know, you know, but once you get that idea, it might draw people in that would do, you know, think, well, I'm specifically interested, or our group would be able to make use of that, and it'd be like a mutual thing, because if you're wanting to be able to use that space for whatever your group's doing, then you think, well, actually I can help out to get that space, and it might help with the pressure on, maybe on individuals as well, because of its groups, it helps with the sort of collective's idea.
I was just thinking about part of what you said there. I was thinking what talking about having aims and everything, I think clarity about what you kind of want to provide, I think is seems quite important, at least from my experience with other stuff like notifications. If you don't know what exactly you're trying to do, you can't build up tactics to suit that in the first place. So I'm just going to say, I think the more you can get kind of sorted out before everything goes into action, the much easier it is to then tailor how everything is organised up to what you want to achieve once the ball's rolling.
So I think the idea is one of these about sort of the different collectives that, you know, have people are running their own things is quite positive as well. Like, you don't want, like, you people sat here, or you 15 or however many people come to the meeting, you don't want to be in charge of everything, and you don't want to be sort of, I remember going to Matilda Centre that they had sort of the art collective and the gig collective or whatever, and this sort of thing, it works very well, and also that protects the CMX Centre from sort of financially from things that is like, I don't know, if the bar goes tits up, that veggies and the flats above and this sort of thing are fairly safe still in the building, and that they have to find a new tenant for the bar, so for example. So perhaps you want to look at people who just want space but are like-minded, and perhaps, you know, I don't know, artist studios or anything that just gets people in that perhaps pay a bit of regular rent, and then you have a free space and a body of people for which to work with.
Yeah, that's definitely an ideal, and that's very space dependent. And on a smaller scale, kind of following what you're saying, I'm thinking about other social centres where they might have like a cafe every Wednesday, but a different political group within the city will take on doing that cafe each Wednesday. And that on a much smaller scale kind of also spreads the load, gets other groups coming along and, you know, participating in the centre and seeing that it serves a benefit for them, because they can use it as a fundraiser for themselves. Means that there's regular food without there needing to be a regular kind of, you know, cooking group. So I think things like that are really, yeah, really positive. We've got about 5 minutes. Do you want to finish off in any particular way?
Say anything about October?
It is worth saying something,
right.
Yes.
So, the decision has been made to have another free school the first half of October. We've been offered the same venue again that we had last year. No one knows where it is. It's quite a good venue, and apparently it's even bigger now. That art space has got the place behind it as well. So we're having a meeting, first planning meeting on
Monday the 30th of June.
At Rutland Arms, and anyone's welcome to come and chip in ideas. And
Yeah. Or that's equally, for those of you who are out of towners, to come along in October, or get in touch if you'd like to come along and view something at the free school, then, yeah, we'll just publicise it and stuff. So the details will be all on the Social Centre website.